And we will call this meeting to order. Time is 11:07 and today is February 7th. Today we're going to be hearing House Concurrent Resolution 25. And this has to do with regulations on statewide correspondence programs. I'm just going to briefly describe a little bit about this. Representative Thomas, Representative Wilson, Representative Salmon, Representative Gatto, and Chair Newman present. And Representative Wyrock in the audience, who was more than welcome to come sit with us. And we also have Representative Lynn. HCR 25 has to deal with some of the regulation changes that were made in 04 that deal with 11 statewide correspondence programs. We're going to hear a little bit today about this, a sponsor statement from my staff, Rex Shattuck, and then we're going to hear some public testimony. We're going to hear from a DED. We might even have some kids in the audience here to speak on it, of why homeschooling is important to them. This has been a huge issue across the state. I know that we hear about a lot of issues, but I think this is quite a bit of comment from folks across the state. And this is the amount of feedback I've had from citizens across the state. So let's get this ball rolling here. Rex, if you'd like to come up and talk about and do the sponsor statement. Representative Guerra is also here for the record.
For the record, my name is Rex Shattuck, staff to Representative Newman, Chair Newman, members of the committee. An important issue facing us today in Alaska is education. Education of all students in a fair and equitable manner, all students throughout the state of Alaska. Accordingly, HCR 25 provides us with the opportunity to give clear direction for equitable treatment of correspondence and homeschool students. In 2004, the Department of Education and Early Development, DEED regulations, put funding restrictions on supplementary services to students in all statewide correspondence programs. DEED's regulations eliminated many of the educational choices previously available to the students and put further restrictions on the amount allowed for music, art, and PE. A disparity exists between rules concerning how in-district and out-of-district school programs may spend funds. The interpretation of these regulations is having a negative impact on more than 8,000 homeschooled and correspondent students. HCR 25 requires that all students be treated equally and that student educational allotments be unrestricted except as provided in the Constitution of the State of Alaska and Alaska statutes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Shattuck. The committee would hold questions for Mr. Shattuck. As a sponsor of this bill, I think we're going to, if you'd like to have more questions or input on this is my resolution. When we get to committee discussions, we can go over them at that time. Representative Wyrock, would you like to come testify? Okay, I guess he must have had to step out for a moment. Wanted to make sure that he had the chance if he did. Well, let's hear from the DED what they have to say today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the Director of School Finance. And Mr. Chairman, we just delivered a letter to you from Commissioner Sampson addressing House Concurrent Resolution 25. Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'd like to read the letter from the Commissioner into the record.
If you could hit maybe some of the higher points just to make sure we can keep moving along.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do that. Mr. Chairman, the letter from the Commissioner identifies the two main issues in the resolution that Mr. Shattuck spoke to, whether the regulations governing statewide programs should be applied to local school district correspondence programs, and number two, whether the 15% cap on non-core expenditures should be lifted. As the department reviewed the resolution, those were the two issues that came to the surface for us. Mr. Chairman, the State Board of Education and the department, as well as the legislature, have been working on this issue for a number of years now, as you're well aware. And in December of 2003, the department worked with the programs that are operating statewide correspondence programs in assisting us in developing the regulations that this resolution speaks to. It was from those, from that cooperative effort, working with those school districts, that those regulations were finalized, taken before the state board, put out for public comment, and then finally adopted. The department also came to the legislature in 2004 and made a presentation to the House Special Committee on Ways and Means that was chaired by Representative Hawker. And Mr. Chairman, the department asked the legislature for guidance in this area because at that time we felt that the best way to address this issue is through amendments to the statutes. During that meeting, that committee asked us to go back and work through the regulatory process with those programs that we had already started with back in December, the prior December. So that's what the department did. We continued to work with those programs. I believe our meeting was in June when they were finally adopted. There was representation from the statewide correspondence programs. In fact, we worked into the night amending regulations that were out for public comment before they were finally adopted. Specifically, we addressed the issue dealing with defining what core subjects were, as well as placing the cap at 15% on music, fine arts, and physical education. It was the department's understanding at that time that the programs involved during those discussions thought that that was an acceptable limit. Mr. Chairman, we appreciate the work that you're doing on this, and the department is ready to answer questions and respond.
Yes, Mr. Jeans. First, I'd like to note for the committee that there is no fiscal note attached to this. This does not, if these restrictions on allotment funds for statewide programs are lifted, this will not cost the state of Alaska one dime more. This does not take away money from any other programs. This money is already allocated to the school districts. At this year, at 15% of BSA, that amounts to around $4,000. That's per child. At 80% of BSA, of 4919, which is allocated this year, is around $4,000. Out of that money, the correspondence programs typically get, it depends on grade level, but $1,800 to $2,000 out of that for parents to buy their allotment, their curriculum for their students. What's happened after this is, you know, and it's like a lot of bills that we pass here that become law, there's a cause and effect after we see what happened. Then we can go back and look at maybe some things that need to be rehashed out. And I think that's what happened here. In some of the areas that Mr. Jeans talked about, I think just one of the most important things is this does not cost more. I just want to re-hit this a little bit, something that I missed earlier, is the fact that, again, this money goes to the school districts. And what I'm asking with this resolution is to be able to allow the parents to purchase the curriculum for their children. Now, in all the in-district programs, there are a school district that has their own correspondence program. These restrictions do not apply. They only apply to the 11 statewide programs. And I think there's an equality thing there that all kids need to be treated equal, that they all need the same opportunities. And in the June 4th meeting of the Department of Education, State Board of Education, last June 4th, there was, and I asked for this from the DED and did not receive it yet, so I'm expecting it shortly, is a copy of a report on correspondence programs to the State Board of Education. And in that report, it said out of the 11 statewide correspondence programs, these programs did respond to some of the concerns of the DED and the State Board of Education. And through that response, they felt that considerable progress is made in those statewide programs coming into compliance. And in fact, that only in 2 out of 6 areas, 2 of the 11 programs had minor problems. So the problems of the past have been worked out through DED and the statewide programs. That's history. That's gone. They are, in fact, pretty much in compliance, Mr. Deans.
Mr. Chairman, we have not gone out and audited those programs again since that initial audit, so it would be premature for me to say they're all in compliance.
But according to last June 4th of last year at that time?
Mr. Chairman, I'd say that the programs are complying to the best of their ability with the laws and regs.
Okay. Just want to make sure that we're clear on that. So what this does is it just makes sure that they have come into compliance, and this just asks for equality. Now, a lot of school districts, if you're in district, and I'll explain a little bit further, if you're in district, these restrictions don't apply, so you can have a lot more leverage on how you spend those funds, and that's fine. I think that they should be able to do that, because what's happened is if you have a child that's in 5th, 6th grade, and you buy your 6th grade curriculum, when your 5th grader gets to 6th grade, you don't need to purchase that curriculum again. You use the same curriculum because you're familiar with it. It's easier for you to teach. You're better teaching it. But this leaves a little bit of the allotment funds available to purchase more programs such as music, art, PE, which I think are very, they're needed for a well-rounded education. You know, you have a student or one of your children is very interested in music. They can go on and get to, you know, college in music, and it's a great thing, but they need to be able to spend that funds on there, and the bottom line is it's an equality thing. A little bit more on core subjects. Mr. Jeans, are there school districts right now that don't have to comply to the area in core subjects where they would have to have 4 core subjects to belong to that district?
Mr. Chairman, we do not regulate that at this point.
So you do not regulate? Do you know if there is school districts that do not make their children that are enrolled in correspondence programs? Can they be enrolled in a correspondence program and still be enrolled in something else?
Mr. Chairman, we have on the books the part-time attendance law that allows students to enroll in the brick and mortars on a part-time basis, or as well as the statewide correspondence program on a part-time basis. Mr. Chairman, if I may, real briefly, that the State Board of Education made their specific policy calls in adopting the regulations because the board believes that the state board believes that local school boards have authority and responsibility to operate their programs within their district boundaries. And schools that operate programs on a statewide basis don't have this second layer of accountability. And what I mean by that, Mr. Chairman, is within a local school board, you have locally elected school board officials. And if the parents feel that they're expending public funds inappropriately, then they go to the school board and they make their case, or they don't reelect them. On a statewide program, you don't have that second layer of accountability, and so the state board has assumed that responsibility, and that's why those regulations were adopted dealing with core subjects as well as the cap on the physical education, music, and fine arts. And the reason that came about was we found that there was a number of students that were enrolling in programs on a part-time basis or even on a full-time basis that weren't taking any core subjects. The full allotment was being spent on things such as health club memberships, ski passes, family trips.
And on that issue, I believe, again, as I stated earlier, is when the DED audited these programs as of last June, they found that that was not happening anymore, that these programs have changed their regulations and come into guidance with what DED is now requiring. and that's not an issue anymore.
But, Mr. Chairman, it's not an issue as a result of the regulations placing the limits on those programs.
Is there schools right now, Mr. Jeans, that you don't have to be enrolled full-time in core subjects and still be in their correspondence programs? I'll ask that again.
Mr. Chairman, yes, there are.
Okay. But only if you're in district but not out of district.
Mr. Chairman, you're correct.
So the rules don't apply the same for all kids?
Mr. Chairman, the rules do not apply the same for in-district versus out-of-district correspondence programs.
Okay. Just a couple more, just for the information for the committee here. If we look in state statute under the duties of the board, this has to do with the State Board of Education. Nowhere in there does it mention anything about the appropriation of funds. Three other places in statute that is given to, that control is given to the local board to make sure that that is done. And the DED does monitor to make sure that those funds are spent correctly. This has been challenged in court. There is court rulings on this. Notes to decisions. In court, the authority of school board over its budget and district operation. This had to do with some land sale, but the court went on to say because the local school district had management authority over its budget as well as district operations. Also, it goes on further in a different, in another court case. It says school districts have broad discretion in their procurement procurement decisions. So two different court decisions gave the authority of the local school boards to have appropriations over how they do their allotment funds. And when we talk about local control, you had mentioned local control, and this is why the DED feels that they have the authority to do this. I contend that local control stands with the parent. They can vote with their feet with any program that they want. They can join their local correspondence program. A lot of school districts don't offer a correspondence program, so if they want to do the homeschool programs, they have to go to a statewide program. What about that case? You know, and so these are a lot of questions that this would be resolved. And again, the bottom line is this would not cost the state one more dime. This money is already going to the school districts. This would allow the parents to spend that money, purchase educational opportunities for their children. Those education opportunities are being missed right now because of these regulations, and this is a cause and effect, that's where we'll go on that. Would you like to add anything more to that, Mr. James?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
I think it's been very clear from the beginning that the department has asked for guidance from the legislature in this area. If the legislature feels that it's appropriate for families to spend the $2,000 or $1,800 that they get in a family allotment, all of it, on ski passes, family travel, memberships in the athletic clubs, health clubs, then please pass a piece of legislation and we will be more than happy to amend our regulations to comply and implement the law. But we don't believe that that's an appropriate use of public funds, and the state board has stated that through their regulatory powers.
And again, just in response to that, Mr. Jeans, is neither do the school districts. And the school districts have come into compliance, and they do not allow that to happen anymore.
Mr. Chairman, they're in compliance with the regulations as they are on the books today.
And do they also have their own guidelines on how they should spend their allocations? I believe like the IDEA program is the largest one of those, 3,500 kids. Right now, they have stipulations in place that say that you can't spend more than $350 or $400 on any particular subject. So that you can't go out there and spend $1,800 on ski passes and such. So anyhow, we can move on to more stuff. That is there any questions from the committee to Mr. Jeans? Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jeans, I've got Mon Edge come in my district. And I'm trying to think, but doesn't the state board control Mon Edgecombe and what the money's spent and stuff? How does that work?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, Mon Edgecombe is a state-operated school.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, who's their school board?
Their school board is the State Board of Education.
So they do control the money in some instances?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, they do.
That's what I thought, but I wasn't sure. Okay.
Representative Goh.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. You mentioned that we would expect from the State Board of Education that students would take reading, writing, math, language, history, et cetera, as core curriculum, and then also there would be room in there for non-core curriculum. Indeed, some of these students, and obviously this did happen, where, as you, I'm assuming you're absolutely 100% right, because I believe you said some students took only the athletic portion of this. Did they take any courses at all, even non-core curriculum?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, many of the discussions that we're having here today are the same issues that were raised before the House Special Committee on Ways and Means in December or in January of 2004. There are instances, and I'm not going to say it was all statewide programs, where they were serving, enrolling students on a full-time basis that were attending private school on a full-time basis. They were not taking any core courses. Now, what that money was being used for, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't being used for core courses. And we're simply asking the legislature, if that's your desire, tell us through legislation. If that's your desire to allow students and parents to spend public funds on anything they see fit, give us the statutory direction and we'll implement the regs.
Let me continue.
Representative Gatto.
Yeah, if I can continue. In that case, I think I should be enrolling in some of these schools and take my family on trips. And we know that's not the legislative intent. And no legislative person, I think, would propose that. And we did cover that in Ways and Means, certainly in education and even in finance subcommittees. This was a subject dealt with at large. It was, I believe, the legislative intent to say there were some people that took advantage of an opportunity, and our job was to close down that ability to take advantage of it. I thought we did that, and that where we stand now was that we essentially closed down the ability of individuals to say, let's take all our money and go to Disneyland. It was a loophole, and I think that loophole has disappeared. Am I correct at least in that?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, we believe that that's what the regulations that are currently on the books addressed.
And so where we are now is we're looking, and I've been approached by some people who said we would like to be able to use some of our money for some things besides what the brick and mortar schools are required to use. Just one second. Yeah. I listened so long I forgot my own train of thought here, but I know the intent here was that that we're dealing with these regulations now. Did the regulations, in your mind at least, accomplish what the goal of the legislature was in your discussions at that time with Ways and Means, Finance Subcommittee, and Education?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I believe that the work we did with the statewide correspondence programs in developing and the State Board adopting those regulations addressed the issues.
Okay, and if I can continue, the most important one for me is there's something in this bill here that says HCR 25 requests that all students be treated equally and that, and then it goes on. But just that initial fragment there, all students be treated equally, I think you would probably say that it is unequal treatment of students to allow some to use their money differently than is required by others. Would that be a fair statement?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I understand what you're saying, and in my mind, that shifts the discussion to a different discussion, and that's family allotment accounts, and where school districts are going to provide family reimbursements for purchasing curriculum. I would have to say you're on target, and we probably need to take a look at that. But that's dealing specifically with programs that provide reimbursement for instructional materials.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm having a hard time grasping what this resolution would do if we passed it. It seems non-binding. I'm just worried. So, Mr. Jean says, if this resolution were passed as written, it doesn't seem to establish any standards or rules. What would be the impact on the Department of Education if we pass this resolution? Would there be any?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, we would take the resolution to the state board and ask for their guidance in how to proceed at that point. If they wanted to reopen the regulations and amend them based on a resolution passing, or if they wanted to stay the course with the current regulations.
So if we just pass this as a non-binding resolution, then the Board of Education wouldn't necessarily have to change anything?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, that's my understanding.
And then just, this question's either for the sponsor or for you, Eddie. I'll ask the sponsor, but if ask
certainly.
My understanding is that if you're a student who lives within a school district, and it's just a district-wide homeschooling program, the local school board regulates how you can spend your money, and there's no state rules that govern how much money you can spend on gym as opposed to core subjects. Is that right? That's a school board decision?
Yes.
So, and then with students who are from out of the district, the state regulates it for the reasons that we discussed. Is it your intention to not allow local school districts to make the decisions for local students?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I think what this does, Representative Guerra, and I think this kind of summarizes your question a little bit, and I'll put it into fact, is there's parents who live in the Mat-Su Borough School District that belong to the idea of state program or core cyberlinks or one of the 11 programs. Because the Mat-Su Borough School District has a correspondence program, whether they did or not, it doesn't matter. But they do. They have no restrictions on their allotment funds. These restrictions on allotment funds do not apply to them. But because of that family lives in Houston or Willow and belongs to a statewide program, then the restrictions apply to them because they live in the Mat-Su Borough. So in essence, because of the location where they live, mm-hmm. these restrictions, I would say, it targets them and really puts a bind on them, but it almost discriminates to them because of where they live. If they lived in Galena, they wouldn't have restrictions on them.
Let me just follow up, and then
certainly.
Just so now I understand. I mean, there's one problem where, see, the resolution, the way it reads, it says all students should be treated equally, which implies that you're not going to allow local school districts to regulate things differently. And so I don't know that the resolution does what we intend. And then on the other side, I don't think that we're establishing any standard for how the statewide children, what rules should apply to them. And so on that side, I think maybe we should at least state a rule that we think should apply instead of...
There, Representative Guerra, there was, again, as provided by information that I asked for DED to supply here, but we didn't get, that said that when they did check and see if these programs were following guidance. And also, I think it's very important is this last sentence on this, the sponsor statement. It says, as provided by the Constitution of the State of Alaska and Alaska statutes. There is Alaska statutes and standards that do talk about how those monies are spent. And all this, the only thing that this resolution does, and I didn't want to put a binding, as Eddie said earlier, Mr. Jean said earlier, that the State Board of Education was asking for guidance from this legislative body, and I wanted to provide guidance, and I thought that the form of a resolution would do that, to bring it up for discussion so we can look at it again. Also, again, it's not, as has been previously stated, that a lot of these programs are going to go out and allow you to spend your money whatever way you want, because that's not the way it is. That's not the reality of it, and that's not the way that it works.
Yes, just one more question.
Certainly.
So if your goal is to have all students treated equally, but you want local school boards to be able to regulate the kids within those school districts, and the local school districts regulate their kids differently, then how is this resolution going to result in all kids being regulated equally?
What it does is it asks the State Board of Education to make it so that whether you belong to an in-district program or not a district program, you all play by the same rules. Let's ask one more here, and then we're going to need to get to some testimony. Representative Wilson?
Okay, I'm going to try to see if I can clarify this a little bit, because for less, maybe. The reason that in school, in the district, correspondence schools have different rules is because when the kids that are on correspondence want to do the music, they go to the school and do the music. That might be the only thing they do at the school. Or they go to the school and they can even be in sports, and every district has different rules for that. I mean, some of them might say, well, you have to take one of our courses, right, with the regular ones, and then you can go out for sports too. I mean, so every district is different, and so that's just the way it is all across the state. So because there were out of district ones, there was no local area to no local official school board, and so somebody had to do it, and so the state board does it. Mm-hmm. But it's not because of where they live that the difference is. It's because of the choice the parents made. They said, I don't want my kids to go to that school. And they said, and if there is a correspondence school, they've chosen not to take that correspondence school. So they have to go by the rules then with the local board that happens to be the state school board. So, I mean, they're all treated equal because every district has its own rules except the ones that don't have a district, and then that's the school board's rules. Now, I was on the committees, and so we really discuss this a lot. So, but right now, I guess where I'm confused a little bit, because if the rules fix the problem and people aren't going to do that, then why do we need to change the rules? Maybe you can answer that.
Certainly, Representative Wilson, is there was two programs that were causing a lot of the majority of the problems, kind of the bad apple in the barrel that caused a lot of public outcry on this. I think there was a certain amount of knee-jerk reaction to it. And what happened is when the State Board of Regulations said, well, we need to look at this, at that time, school districts implemented new regulations to comply with what needed to be done. But right now, that only applies to statewide programs. Again, there's school districts where you can enroll your kids in Silva Learning Center or Christian schools and not even be enrolled in not even one core subject in the school district. And take that money, and the school district will pay for that bill from Live Silva Learning Center and such. You can use your allotment fund to do that. Right, wrong, or different, I don't know. I think some of the statewide programs, they resisted that temptation and not going in that direction. But again, it just makes it so that all kids are treated equal again. And when you asked, you said you were somewhat confused on the issue, and I don't think it's such a confusing issue as the fact that, you know, we need to remember that it relays options and competition amongst the schools, and this is what makes them better. And this is not a bad thing. But maybe we can hear some public testimony on this, and that'll help you, and you can talk to some of the people who actually deal with this issue every day. First, we're going to do a little bit of the folks online here. Thank you, Mr. Jean.
Thank you.
We're going to go to some of the folks online. Try and keep your comments to a couple of minutes here if you can, please. We'll start with Debbie Jocelyn. And please state your name and who you represent.
Thank you, Representative Newman. I'm Debbie Jocelyn, and I live in Delta Junction, and I represent Eagle Forum, Alaska. We have over 1,000 members statewide, and many of them have children in statewide correspondence programs. I have several points to make, and I'll try to keep it brief. I would like, just for clarification first, though, to just give a scenario of a family that's got four school-age children in correspondence programs. And as Representative Newman had noted earlier, once you've bought a certain curriculum and you like it and you're going to use that again, if you have third grade math and you use that on your eldest child, you're not going to go buy it all over again for the second child, the third child. You'll have to buy new workbooks, but that's it. And so allotment money that isn't needed for that, because a lot of that stuff's already bought for the subsequent children, can be used for piano lessons. It can be used for physical education. It can be used for art supplies if it's not tied up in a 15% cap. After doing much research, I've not been able to find any group of schools or school children anywhere that are being restricted in the manner that DED has restricted children in the statewide correspondence programs in Alaska. I looked at budgets and regulations governing charter schools in several other states and found nowhere that funds were being restricted to certain percentages for the arts and physical education. At first glance, it may have made sense to allow only 15% of the allotments to be used for art, music, and physical education. After all, these are elective classes, and the bulk of the money should be spent on core classes, such as reading, math, English, and science. To the untrained eye, this might make sense. But as a homeschool teacher myself with 8.5 years of experience, I can tell you that the elective courses cost more to administer than the core subjects do. Whether you're talking about a traditional brick-and-mortar school or a homeschool, the core curriculums are less expensive to administer. To teach an English class, you need a textbook and a workbook, paper and pencil, access to a library. As a homeschooler, we don't buy a library. We visit the public library. Reading classes take pretty much the same. Ditto for spelling. Math class can be done with a textbook, workbook, paper, pencil, inexpensive manipulatives, a protractor, compass, and calculator. Music, on the other hand, takes sheet music and the instruments themselves, special rooms big enough to accommodate the acoustics of music ensembles in the case of public schools, and students can't learn to play a musical instrument without some individualized teaching, and that's going to be much more expensive than just hiring a teacher for reading or math as a group. And the same goes with a homeschool setting. The teacher is the mother, and she can teach the core subjects, but she's got to hire someone to teach piano or trumpet or whatever the instrument is a lot of times. Art classes require no end of expensive art supplies. And physical education in brick-and-mortar schools include team sports. They're very, very costly. The travel costs, uniforms, and hockey rinks, swimming pools, football fields, etc., could not possibly be accomplished with only 15% of budget. It certainly would not if you added the cost of art and music and PE together. It's my understanding that the regulations were restricted as a result of reports of allotment funding being misused. There was no need to change these regulations because of that. It wasn't the regulations that were at fault. It was individuals or certain programs that were misusing funds, and appropriate action could have been taken to stop the diversion of money that was intended for the education of correspondence students. At no time have I heard any allegation that correspondence students as a group are doing poorly on their achievement tests. It's my understanding that as a whole, correspondence students are at a level at least par with their brick-and-mortar public school counterparts. If this is true, what was DEED trying to fix by penalizing correspondence students and restricting their funding so severely that they're forced to choose one of the three subjects, art, music, or PE? The bottom line is that it was never the intent of the legislature for correspondence students to be restricted by being forced to spend only a designated portion of their allotments on certain classes. District correspondence programs are not being treated this way, nor should they. These regulations do not save the state of Alaska one red cent. The allotment amount is the same with or without the restrictions, so there's no upside to this equation. Alaska's correspondence students are the ones being hurt. And I wish to thank Representative Newman for introducing this resolution, and I urge this committee to pass HCR 25 today. Thank you for your time.
Do we have any questions from Ms. Josh and from this Representative Garrow?
I do have a question. So maybe the rules that the Department of Education has passed are not the wisest, but it seems that you need to have some rules so that the state is assured that a child's focus in a correspondence program is on core subjects and not PE. And so do other school districts have policies that make sense that the state should look at to implement for those children who aren't regulated by a school district?
When I was in a public correspondence program, a statewide correspondence program, of course the students would enroll in all of the subjects, in the core subjects, of course. And if you had three or four children and you only needed to buy math, third grade once, and so on and so forth. You didn't need to buy that curriculum that year because you purchased it another year for an earlier student, then you still enrolled in the program. You still enrolled in third grade math. You just didn't buy anything for it. And so, of course, the teacher helper at the correspondence program would go over with you, you know, what classes you were enrolling in. And to be a full-time student, we had to have four core classes. We had to have a full slate of classes, and we discussed what classes the children were going to enroll in. And because if you didn't need that money, though, for that class, you just didn't spend it. You had it available to spend it in other class where you did need the money, because you can't use PE twice, you know, and piano lessons aren't left over at the end of a school year. Does that help?
Representative Garrett, too, is you had mentioned that they aren't regulated by a school district. They are regulated by the school district. The school district that runs the statewide program does have regulations in place, and that's who governs that correspondence program.
Yes, Chairman Newman, if I could add, too, though, that the statewide correspondence programs did have their own regulations, and they did administer these programs. And as a parent, if you had a question or if you had a problem with how things were going or you felt like the funds were being misused, then you had the same ability as a parent in a local school board that you could go to them and let that be known that you had a problem. And there are even certain people designated as a committee that represents the parents on the statewide correspondence school board.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, Ms. Jocelyn, first of all, I'm overwhelmed. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate a mom who spends 8 years teaching at home, because I know you only can do that by making sacrifices. And lots of times when I meet people that are willing to do that, I feel like I need a genuflect. And so, listening to you, you sound, without saying, you know, well-educated, I'm going to say really smart, and I think your children benefit greatly. However, there are some things that you said that I just felt I needed to address. When you say homeschool students do at least as well as public school students, I would have expected you would have been able to say far exceed the performance of public school students, because you are effectively giving children a one-to-one, where in a public school I have seen numbers of 1 to 35. And if I took 30... If I took away 98% of your one-to-one time, I would expect your students would do significantly poorer than they are currently doing. Is there some reason why, with this extraordinary educational ability you have, especially if you're using a book for the second or third time, that you can't produce a product greater than at least as good as a public school student?
Well, Chairman Newman, to answer the question, I didn't want to exaggerate, because I can't speak for all students and all parents. I believe that if you take it as a whole, I'm sure we do at least as well. I can only speak my experience with my students. When we were enrolled in the correspondence program, the statewide correspondence program, every spring my children would take these tests. They would take, I believe, the Terra Nova and I believe the state standard achievement test. My kids did perfect on those tests. Most of the time, they got every question right. And I would say to my daughter, I said, you don't even like math. You're not, you know, that's your hard subject. And she said, but the questions were so easy, Mom. And she got a perfect score on her English. All my kids are at the top. And I know a lot of other kids that are like that, too. It's not always that way, no. But with many of the kids, it is that way, because we can take the time. If my child does a math paper and they get three wrong, we go back over that until it's a perfect paper. We don't go on, because we have the luxury of being able to take the time to find out exactly what went wrong and fix that and make sure that they understand the concept before we move on. And that's a luxury that I realize you don't have in the public school.
And on that note, and Ms. Johnson, thank you for your testimony. I want to move on to some more folks. But I just want to respond to Representative Gatto. Is the IDEA program through Galena has recently been accredited, received national accreditation from the Northwest Association of Accredited Schools. Very, highly academic accreditation. And when they did test their 10th grade scores, I'm going back on memory here, I believe it was 86% passed the English, and then like 82% the science or the reading, and then it was 68% was their lowest score, and that was in math. But when they came to annual yearly progress, the AYP program, the only area that they failed in, that why the reason that they didn't make AYP had to do with just marginally lower than average test scores of their 51 African-American students that belonged to that program. They categorically, when you look at the cut, they categorically evaluated and graded much higher than the cut in all other subjects. Representative Thomas?
Yes, I have a question for Jocelyn there. When you buy music or art, who do you buy that program from? Who do you buy your music classes from and your art classes? Who provides that?
For art classes, there are a lot of different curriculums out there. We use something called Atelier, and it's a video program, and the kids and I would sit and watch that, and we could stop it and rewind it and look at that again. And we would we bought videos, and we would sit there and do those classes like that. For music, primarily what we were doing is paying for piano lessons. Now, lots of people do lots of different things, but for us it was piano lessons, and we would buy sheet music, and we would pay for a piano teacher. In our town, piano lessons are very cheap compared to a lot of places, and we would pay $15 to $20 per lesson, and so that's a weekly lesson. For two children right now, I'm paying about $170 a month, and I'm paying that out of my own pocket for the piano lessons, and that doesn't include the music, that doesn't include competitions and other opportunities that come out of that too.
And Representative Thomas is a homeschool father myself. This is our seventh year, very intimately involved in the process, and so it's not just mothers, Ms. Jocelyn. Is the fact that an individual learning plan is produced, and that individual learning plan has to include how those allotment monies are going to be spent. That has to be approved by the teacher to make sure that it's in line with the child's learning and what they've been doing in the past and where they expect to go in the future. So there's a plan that's laid out for that child from the past that's followed on through to make sure they don't fall through the cracks academically. Then it has to meet within the guidelines, which are very strict guidelines on how those monies can be spent and what you can purchase it on, with maximum amounts on those. And also, if Representative Guerra, if you had a son that you wanted to learn welding to work on our new pipeline, hopefully, that we get, you would have to probably look for somebody who is highly qualified in welding, where state certification, several years of on-the-job training, make sure they have all the equipment to where you could hire this person at $15 or $20 an hour to teach your son or your daughter how to become a welder. And that's how the program has to work. It's very innovative. As suggested by the Northwest Association of Accredited Schools, and some of the, if you read along, some of there is, it's a very family oriented. They have, families have chosen to commit time and effort necessary to fully involve their children's education. They tend to enjoy a lot of time spending family time together and often active in their local church and civic organizations. And again, it's more of a family thing. I think the parent intimately knows the child, and I think that's why they're so successful, is the fact that they can take and mold their children's education to around that children's innermost needs and desires, and I think that that's what's made them as successful as they have been. Right now we're going to go to Pat Shear from Juneau, Fritz Cove Road, I guess. Pat, are you available?
It's right here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Pat Shear. I reside at 3324 Fritz Cove Road, Juneau, Alaska. To the sponsor and to Representative Harris, my special thanks for bringing this forward. I've been a homeschool parent since 1987, since before the statewide programs were in existence. The things I like in particular about this resolution is it restores some flexibility and equity. It provides some of the legislative guidance that in my testimony before the statewide school board regarding both sets of regulations and in private conversations with individuals at the department, they lamented that was lacking. And it's a good, without legislation, at least half step to give some guidance. However, the 15%, unless that's rescinded, and if we're going to be consistent, could be problematic for some students in brick and mortars that are traveling. If you look at a 15% limit per student, I'm sure we could find students who are on sports teams or involved in special representations of their districts. That's another important reason to just remove that 15% limit, allow the school boards to have their full scope of authority in terms of how they administer their programs. Let's be aware, too, that that secondary level of accountability, while some have said here earlier that that was absent, I would respectfully disagree. The teachers who are on site, who interact with each and every one of these parents, are very, very effective in helping tailor that curriculum and that learning plan to each and every individual that they serve. For example, if we walked out of this room right now and down the street to any one of the public schools here, we would see that there are teachers in classrooms who have taken the guidance of their local school board and expanded it using their own material. Or perhaps for a particular student, they have pulled something out of their bag of tricks and said, here, use this, it may work for you. So I believe those teachers play an important role in that local level of control. I would hazard to guess that the reason that we even have in-district homeschool programs are because some of these statewide programs have come into being and there are options. This is your legislative R&D. It's work very well, and I would hope that you could support that. Parents have incurred significant costs, and let's not live in the old bad old days of anecdote about a few parents who maybe did something that wasn't quite right, and that's all gone now. Let's not talk about those things. If we want to talk about anecdotes, let's talk about the FAS student who was adopted out of a village, who was struggling in school and could not make connection with her classmates or with her subjects. And when the teacher recommended that she get involved in interacting with animals, and went to a horse barn here in Juneau and began to interact with a horse, and she's just little bitty, and this horse was massive. After 1 year, her parents reported that she obtained the ability to connect to her classmates, to her subjects. She is no longer in special education. That's effective use at a flexible level. Here's another anecdote, if we may. Local parent here in Juneau. Young fella from a village again who was in special education for 2 years. The adoptive parents decided to take him home and homeschool him. The second day that this little fellow was home, we'll call him Mike, was out throwing the ball with him. And we'll call the fella Daryl. Caught the ball, switched to his left hand and pitched it back. Light goes on in Mike's head. He takes Daryl inside, sits him down in front of a piece of paper, puts the pen in his left hand. Daryl is no longer in special education. It's not an indictment of our brick and mortar schools. It's just a realization that they have all they can do and more. So let's find a way to level the playing field, to allow parents who are willing to incur the serious investment in time and money, all the flexibility they need. And I would urge you to pass this out today. I'd entertain any questions if
any
there
questions
were.
Questions for Mr. Chair? Representative Gow?
Yeah, thanks. You mentioned that homeschool parents expend a significant amount of their personal funds to help out. Do you feel like public school parents don't do that?
They certainly do, and it depends on the parent. We could all share stories about parents. The Holy Grail, as I've heard it from teachers in the classrooms, is parental involvement. Some children arrive with not much going on from the home front, and the teachers are frustrated with that, understandably so. I believe there's a bill that recognizes that need and is attempting to fund additional positions in schools to bring parents into the mix. But certainly there are many, many parents in public schools that are spending a lot of money. When I say a lot of money, and in addition to that, I'm talking about paying for books and materials that would otherwise be supplied in some cases by school districts.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Shire, is that the name?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. And sometimes in these committees we debate a concept, but we miss what the bill says, and I think that's what's going on here. I agree with you that homeschooling is an incredibly valuable option for parents who are willing to put in the exceptional time that it takes. And I think there are kids in the state who benefit much better from homeschooling than they would from a brick-and-mortar school. And I agree with the testimony that the prior person stated, which was that sometimes if you've already bought the course material, that frees up money so that you shouldn't have to rebuy the course material with your money every year. But that doesn't answer the question that's in this bill. This bill says that the state just should, as it says, leave the funds unrestricted, except as provided by the Constitution, and the Constitution doesn't have any rules on how much money you could spend on PE, or state statutes, and state statutes don't provide any of those rules. So if we pass this, there would be nothing to stop a parent from who didn't care as much about their child's education from spending all the money on sneakers, equestrian lessons, and let's say a tennis club membership. I don't want to pay for that. And so shouldn't we be coming up with rules that are fair to homeschool students instead of saying, you know, God, this is so complex, we just don't want to have any rules at all, spend the money on whatever you want? Shouldn't we?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, my testimony was on that point, I think, and that is that there are controls already in place. Even the statewide districts have school boards. The school boards pass down guidelines to the local teachers. The local teachers work one-on-one with the parents. And I believe what you're referring to are some of those old things that I urge us to move beyond, and that is some of those abuses that came to light, and anecdotal abuses, certainly not widespread. What I see this regulation or this joint resolution doing, this concurrent resolution doing, is re-leveling the playing field so that the students who are in the statewide correspondence programs can enjoy the same interaction with their teachers, the same flexibility that the current brick and mortars do.
Fair enough.
Representative Salem?
What was that? Bob Lynn yawning, I think.
Representative Salem?
Yes. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, the question I have is how do you communicate with the state operated school board?
Through the chair, Representative Salmon, my bride happens to be the local area administrator and teacher coordinator for Raven Correspondence School. The main office for Yukon Koyukuk School District is in Fairbanks. They have teleconference equipment installed that connects not only their Nine River schools, but also all of their remote sites. And they regularly have staff meetings. And the leadership meets with the school board. Sometimes the staff, field staff, meet directly with the school board. That's how it's communicated back and forth.
A short follow-up there. So the school board that your family deal with is in Galena? Is that what you're saying?
Through the chair, Representative Salmon, it's actually the school board for YKSD is scattered among some of the Nine River villages that they serve. And also in Fairbanks, I believe.
Representative Guerra?
Thank you. And just so I understand, so is your proposal is not to leave these funds completely unrestricted where a parent could spend $4,000 of money on tennis lessons, but you want the statewide correspondence school children to follow rules set by the school board for the school that they're part of. Do I understand that correctly?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, to the extent that these regulations return statewide school districts to the same fundamental controls that exist for brick and mortar schools, that's my hope that this resolution will accomplish.
So you would want to be regulated by the school board for the school, for the correspondence school?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, yes.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Shire. Kathy Yokel, Taylor Yokel, are you available from the Fairbanks LIO?
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
My name is Kathy Taylor Yokel, and I just want to thank you for this opportunity to testify. I live at 451 Summer Avenue. I don't know if I'm supposed to tell you that in Fairbanks, and I'm a homeschool parent. I urge you to support HCR 25 to put in place not just consistent regulations regarding district and statewide correspondence programs, but also to eliminate completely student allotment restrictions on all correspondent students. And I hope if you disagree with me that you'll listen to my reasoning. I'm a homeschool parent of a ninth grader. I'm also a certified teacher, secondary and elementary. I have taught elementary school, and I have taught math and science at the secondary level. But before I was a teacher, I always wanted to be a homeschooling parent. And when I was a teacher, I wasn't a parent. And then I became a parent. I had a child and became a parent and decided that that's really the path my life wanted to go. So I've been a homeschooling parent now for 14 years, and my daughter has just blossomed through homeschooling. Now, although I have education credentials and a lot of experience teaching, I cannot be an expert to her in every subject. So I purchased the services of a professional who can teach my child specifically the musical skills that I lack and the specific physical education skills that I lack. She is really fascinated with ballet and Pilates. Now, in a building-based school, each teacher that a student goes to is an expert at what they do. They have a degree in that subject, and they are a credentialed teacher. I'm a credentialed teacher, but I'm not an expert in all those subjects. So I purchased those services. Now, there are certified teachers at IDEA who currently oversee what we do educationally. Somebody mentioned, I don't know these voices, someone mentioned that there's an individual learning plan for students. Children who go to public schools, unless they are special ed or perhaps in a gifted and talented program, do not currently have to have an individual learning plan. So that's probably maybe 80% or more of your public school students who do not have an individual learning plan. So a plan, an educational plan for what they're doing this year and where they're going. Our students in statewide correspondence programs are required to have an individual learning plan, and it must be assessed and okayed by a certified teacher through our correspondence program. That certified teacher is employed by a school board through one of the programs. We happen to be with the IDEA program, so that's the Galena City School District. And there is tremendous oversight. If I was to try and teach my daughter a course and pass it off as a course subject and our contact teacher didn't agree with it, he would be the first person to put up a red flag and say, "You can't do this." Now, as a family, we work really hard to share materials with our friends. That's textbooks, all kinds of materials, reading books. We buy things on sale. I'm always scrounging for book sales. And we do a tremendous amount of borrowing materials from the library, both locally, and we have used interlibrary loan to get materials from all over this country because my daughter has some particular interests that aren't available here locally. And then we use those materials in our homeschooling. But I can't buy on sale or borrow her piano or voice lessons or her ballet instruction. I have to purchase those services from professionals. I really want unrestricted allotment funds, completely unrestricted. So someone mentioned $4,000. We don't have $4,000 to use. Each of these programs has an administrative oversight, and there are contact teachers to pay. So, for example, my student is a high school student. I have $2,000 of allotment that I can use this year. If I want to use $2,000 for piano, voice, and ballet and do everything else out of my pocket or because I'm really good at finding things cheap and begging and borrowing from friends, then that should be allowed. Please support HCR 25 and help make the regulations not only consistent but to get rid of the restricted allotment funds. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Yokel, and I'd just like to mention to this committee is this regulation HCR 25 does not ask for full unrestriction of allotment funds, but what it does ask for, and Representative Guerra, there is certainly restrictions on allotment funds for correspondence in district and out of district. What this asks is they all just play by the same rules, have the same guidelines. I've got a lot more people that would like to testify, but I understand that this committee's time is very valuable, and we've got a lot of things to get done today. We do have in the audience some homeschool kids. These are the people that are directly affected. Would any of those students like to come up and talk to this committee about, and not specifically, I'm going to ask you not to specifically address HCR 25, but address why you think homeschooling is important to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm with the IDEA program. I've been homeschooling for the past 3 years with that program. My mom teaches me at home, and my sister has graduated homeschooling and hope to do that with the IDEA program, too. The IDEA program has been really wonderful. It's provided me so much more opportunities to do other things that I otherwise would not be able to do.
Thank you. What was your name again?
Jonathan Brewer.
Jonathan, for the record. Any questions from the committee? Jonathan, you came up and testified just so your other colleagues that are joining here, did it hurt at all to come testify or talk to us?
No.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Maybe any of your colleagues would like to come up and talk to the committee of what they think homeschool is important to them or what they enjoy about it.
For the record, my name is Natasha Oldhoff, and I'm from Fairbanks. I've been homeschooling for several years, and it has just been a great opportunity for me. I love it, and the relationship with my mom and my sister and my dad has been completely different because of that extra one-on-one time that I've spent with them and that I have gotten to concentrate on different educational things. And I've had so many opportunities with IDEA that has allowed me to have a much better, more developed education. And it's also given me a passion to take control of my own education, because I have choice in what I learn, how I learn it, and I have to be disciplined if I am going to learn it, because a lot of times I'm teaching myself. I'm reading through the information, and I have to teach myself. So that gives me a desire to take control so that I can know as much as I just to take advantage of all the knowledge that I can have. And it's just been a great opportunity to be able to homeschool and be at home with my family learning.
Representative Lynn.
What opportunity have you had in music, art, physical education, some of these other activities in your own experience?
Okay. I have taken piano lessons and found out quickly that that's not necessarily where I should be headed.
Yeah, I did too.
I've taken art classes. We had a homeschool co-op where it was actually other parents teaching the group of homeschoolers. And so we've done different art classes, different science classes. I have done snowboarding, horseback riding, swimming, all kinds of things that have really just, they've help me become a better person and be able to experience many different types of things. It's been great.
Natasha, do you feel that because you've had the opportunity, and I think somewhat restricted now, but being able to go out and socialize with your peers is a very important part of a well-rounded education?
Mm-hmm.
And do you feel that that's important and that's helped you to get out there and talk to other kids?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it has. I mean, we all need to be able to communicate to other individuals and to meet people. And I think homeschooling, while it's different, you don't have the same social chances, you're not with your friends all the time, but there's still opportunities for it. And I've spent a lot more time with adults that aren't just teachers, and that's really made a difference in how I can relate to them and how I can communicate to them because of homeschooling and the different places I'm put in.
I might point out that some of the socialization that goes on in school, much of it is very good, but some of it maybe should not be happening.
Representative Gatto?
Yeah, Natasha. In your peer group in Fairbanks, nice big city, you tell them that you took piano lessons and horseback riding lessons, and you talk to kids who are in the public school. What do they say when you tell them that?
They think that's great. A lot of people don't necessarily have the same interests. Like, not everyone wants to take horseback riding lessons. And there's different things that do happen in public school that I don't have. The different equipment, and it's not quite the same level of what they have and what I have. So for me to be able to take horseback riding lessons is... I don't know necessarily what they would say about that, but for the most part, I don't think they see it as being unfair.
Natasha, let's talk about that, because that's an issue that comes up, you know, with the horse riding lessons. And because you had the ability to take these, I'm assuming that you got into this because you're very interested in animals, and that maybe you might want to pursue an education in animals, a veterinary or something like that in the future. And do you get a lot of physical exercise while you're doing this?
Yeah, horseback riding is definitely a lot of physical exercise. And something that, through horseback riding and seeing what it has done for me, and also seeing what it can do for special education children, is more of my interest, of seeing the way it's a very therapeutic way of helping people that have special needs. And so that's been something that I've been able to see through my opportunities of taking horseback riding lessons and seeing the different individuals that are also taking them.
Thank you, Natasha. In fact, that's why my daughter did that, because of the interest in the physical therapy aspects of that, and to help gain more interest in how that is done. Thank you, Natasha.
Thank you.
Representative Garrett, did you have a question?
No.
So make sure everybody has a chance. Anybody else like to talk? At this time, is there any more committee discussion on this? We'd like to talk about it. Maybe we could, Representative Thomas, what happened to Representative Thomas?
I think they are coming.
I'll ask her. Betty, Representative Gatto asked if you may be willing to come up and...
Did you sign up to speak?
No, I didn't mean to.
Okay, never mind. I saw your name there, and I didn't know if that was your intent.
Mr. Chair, can we have Eddie Jeans come up after public testimony is closed?
Sure. Eddie? Actually, does the committee members, let me ask real quick, does the committee, are we on a strict timeline at 12:30 here? Is that what I'm using as a guideline? 1:00. I mean, I've got quite a few people that would like to testify online, and I just want to... I'm trying to ask for guidance in our time, but because I'd like to get a vote on this bill today.
Mr. Chair, I'll stay as long as we need to.
Okay, good.
I'll be out at 1:00.
Okay, well, we got time then. Eddie's there now, and then we'll go back to public testimony.
Okay. Eddie, this is what I don't understand about the resolution, and I'm hoping you can explain it to me. On page 2... it says that if this resolution passes, the money will be unrestricted except for as provided by statute or the Constitution. So if we pass this resolution and the state were to remove the restrictions that the Department of Education has passed by regulation, what restrictions would there be on what a homeschooling parent can spend their allotment on for the children who are doing a statewide program?
Through the chairman, Representative Garrett, passing the resolution, as I stated earlier, we would simply take it back to the state board to see if they wanted to amend their regulations based on the passage of the resolution.
And if they did, let's say they followed the resolution and got rid of the regulatory restrictions, What restrictions would remain in statute and in the Constitution on how funds could be spent?
Through the chair, Representative Garrett, none as far as I know.
There was also some testimony from a couple of the parents that the restrictions would be the restrictions imposed by, I guess, the school board for the correspondence school. What's your response to that?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, my response to that would be, had the local school boards and administrations dealt with these programs appropriately in the beginning, the state board would not have had to regulate these programs. Those regulations came about because of the misuse by the administration of these programs.
And then just finally, for the students who are in a local correspondence school regulated by a local school board, does the 15% rule apply to them too, or just to the children in a statewide correspondence school?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, only to the statewide programs.
And Mr. Jeans, do most of the statewide programs have restrictions on how those funds are spent?
Mr. Chairman, those statewide programs may have regulations adopted by their local school board in place now. But as I mentioned just a second ago, those programs, the reason the state board had to act was because those programs were not regulating themselves. And that's why the state board had to adopt regulations.
Yeah. And again, but they did comply because there wasn't guidance before. And now there was guidance put on there. They said, okay, we will comply. Well, now we do have some guidance. They put those regulations in place as was testified by two in front of the State Board of Education last year. And out of the state, out of the 11 statewide programs, only two districts had problems in two of six areas that were very minimal problems. But all in all, most programs were in line with guidances that were recommended by the state.
Mr. Chair, from everybody we've heard of, these are folks who are truly enrolled in homeschooling. From the children we heard from the parents we heard from, all of the children were attending or doing homeschooling. But the abuses Mr. Jeans was talking about were among those parents who didn't enroll their kids in any core subjects for purposes of homeschooling, but tapped into the allotment to use for physical education. So would you consider amending your resolution to make sure that didn't happen, so that we don't get people who, I guess, pretend they're doing homeschooling but really aren't? Because all of the folks we heard from are really doing homeschooling. There's a difference between the folks we heard from and the problem the department says they were trying to address.
Representative Guerra, that's a very good question. And let me answer that by saying that the statewide programs right now have to have their student has to be enrolled in four core subjects. The in-district programs do not have to. And so what this would be doing would be changing the scope of this resolution to put restrictions on in-district programs. And that's not really what I wanted to do with this. It was add more restrictions on school districts that I think are trying to do their best.
So would it be okay with you for a child not to be enrolled in any core subjects but tap into money to use for recreational purposes?
Representative Guerra, I personally think that that's the way it should be, but again, there is school districts that are doing this, and I would have to confer to them or talk to them, and I think that they do have quite a bit of guidance with their own school districts, and if they want to take that up at the local level, they certainly can. I don't think I'd like to entertain that, but we would certainly entertain that discussion at the State Board of Education and further discussions on this topic, because that is a very important issue. Representative Salmon does need to get going. Is there anybody out in the audience or that's sitting in teleconference that would like to add anything in particular that hasn't been mentioned? Please speak up.
Mr. Chair, this is the Kenai moderator. We have someone who would like to speak.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman and the board, my name is Lee Young, and I'm the principal administrator for the Kenai School District's homeschool program. First of all, I'd like to applaud the state of Alaska for having the opportunity for our families to have homeschool. I had worked in a previous state where the only obligation that the state took was in providing a brick-and-mortar school, and if you're homeschooling, you're totally on your own, so I applaud that. I have a couple of clarification questions, specifically around the unrestricted portion. When you mentioned the allocation, you know, most of the homeschool programs are you know, limiting the allocation to $2,000, but I had heard $4,000. Is this bill, you know, being a little bit unclear, or maybe I'm just not seeing it, is the intent here to allow the families to spend that entire $4,000 in an unrestricted fashion?
No.
Okay. So this bill, even though I'm not seeing it, is saying, you know, maintain that $1,800 to $2,000 overall allocation, but allow that amount of money to be spent unrestricted?
Well, certainly, Mr. Young, there's you can't have a school district enroll in these kids. There's a certain amount of money that's involved with buying the supplies. The computer is purchased for the use of the family for communication to the school district, administrative costs, offices for the district administrative costs. Right now, they're finding those funds at $2,000 or, you know, approximately. That's strained in your budget right now.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that it would maintain at that $2,000 level. As you know, if it went to $4,000, I'd probably have to declare bankruptcy.
And there's no schools, districts right now that are doing more than that I'm aware of.
Right. And our program on the Kenai, we're following the statewide guidelines, probably just to a T. Next question is, you mentioned equality quite a bit, and I just had a question. As I have a little bit of knowledge for the small school districts that have set up offices throughout the states, you know, probably for some financial benefit. My question is the cost differential. If I was a small school district from Galena, and that district obtains a certain cost differential factor for students in that district, if they enroll a student from the Kenai or Anchorage, do they receive the allocation based on what Galena receives or based on what a Kenai or an Anchorage would receive?
No, Mr. Young. Cost differential is the second formula in the student funding formula. The correspondence programs get 80% of base student allocation. At 80%, this year was $49.19, 80% being about $4,000. So that becomes that money, that $4,000 approximately right now, is before the cost differential. So actually, they get less money.
Okay. I appreciate that. That helps me. I wasn't real knowledgeable on that. So regardless where you live in the state, everybody gets at $4,000 approximately.
Correct. Maximum.
So is the bill really two pieces to this bill? Is it... Number one, is it the intent to make all programs consistently the same? Or also, point two, is it the intent to allow parents to spend their allocation how they see fit in an unrestricted fashion?
Mr. Long-Young, Representative Lynn.
I'd like to point out, this is not a bill, it's a resolution.
Correct.
This does nothing except express an opinion. And so the resolution itself does nothing, if I'm correct. So we don't
yes.
have a bill. There is a big difference.
Yes, Representative Levin. And Mr. Young, generally it's inappropriate for, asking questions like that. I know it's important, but questions are generally asked by the members of the committee. Right now, and again, this is a resolution. It just asks that we look at this.
It's an opinion.
And it's an opinion that we look and see if this is fair or not to the Department of Education. It's non-binding. I wanted it to be that way. Again, the State Board of Education was looking for guidance, and I would like to suggest that we do this. Is there any more committee? At this time, I'm going to...
One more final, if I could just finish real quick.
Very quickly.
I guess I see the issue maybe bigger than what this resolution is proposing. I would maybe advocate, if possible, to have the Department of Education have some kind of a working group with representation from, you know, all... parties that might be involved to come up with some kind of a recommendation or a win-win. I think there's some other ways to maybe try to address this issue. You know, something I was thinking about as you were speaking is, you know, maybe having a family account where if one student is not spending their full fine arts allocation, maybe that could be transferred to somebody else in the family. You know, as we know, certain kids at different age levels require different amounts. Fine arts and music and PE and those kind of things, and I've had that request from my families if I could allow that. So I guess I would just advocate for a working group to address this.
Thank you, Mr. Young. And that's what this kind of resolution does, is, again, it gets a discussion of, you know, let's go to cause and effect and look and see if we do need to again, form a working group and look at this. And that's what this is asking to do, is keep the discussion open, you know, is this fair in the allocations on this. Any discussion from the committee? Representative Gatto?
It's a question for Mr. Jeans. We're talking about, as we know, the money follows the student. If the student decides, as a homeschool student, to go to brick and mortar for part time, and to go to correspondence school for part time, that money has to be allocated to those schools where they're hosted. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, that's correct.
And so, if indeed they go to a brick and mortar school and take music, would they be allowed then say they only go for 20% of their time, would they be allowed then to go home and also spend money on music again?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, that's a possibility. And Mr. Chairman, if I may, on the part-time enrollment, that money goes to the district to support that child. We have regulations that specify if you're in one course, you're funded as a quarter-time child, two courses, half-time. And then that would be split between the programs, not to exceed one full-time equivalent. So it depends on how the child and parents select their educational programs.
And I'm going back then to the bottom of page one, where it's HCR 25, request that all students be treated equally. Is that unequal treatment, where a student enrolled full-time in a brick-and-mortar school gets an hour of music, but a student enrolled part-time goes home, takes additional music, and therefore gets 2 hours, 3 hours, some number of hours?
Representative Gatto, that's a sponsor statement that you're referring to.
Yeah, it's true. It's not.
Go ahead and answer that real quick. But we got just a couple of minutes here, and we got to keep moving on this. But I'm not sure I understood the question.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, that part of the reason for the regulations that are currently in place was to ensure that students enrolling in correspondence programs that provide family allotment accounts are taking core subjects and not simply enrolling to get the benefit of the allotment account to support athletic memberships, music lessons, basically electives.
And I will just state that in the statewide programs, you have to be enrolled in at least four programs, four core subjects. You do not have the option of being part-time. You have to be a full-time student.
Mr. Chairman, I respectfully disagree with that. The part-time student law allows part-time enrollment either in brick-and-mortar or correspondence. And what the regulation says is 50% of your courses have to be core. So if you want access to that supplemental money for other things other than core, you have to take one core course, then you can take an
But you can't belong PE. To two different school districts. You have to belong to one school district.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you could be enrolled in 50% in correspondence and 50% in a brick and mortar.
In one school district, but not multiple school districts.
Yes, in multiple, in one. I mean, that part of the law is very clear in allowing part-time enrollment.
But then it allows you to get less money for it.
Mr. Chairman, if I was the statewide correspondence program serving you, I would give you a smaller allotment than the 1,800. Yes.
And then lies. Representative Wilson? And again, Representative Salmon does have to leave here shortly, so we can keep it short.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. I'm trying to juggle myself between two different committees right
now. Yeah, we all are.
But basically, what the whole thing really is that the homeschoolers want to have more money allotted them so they can spend it on the things that they want. Is that basically what it is?
To purchase educational opportunities that fit inside the boundaries of their learning plan. Yes.
Just so I understand the part-time allotment, the DED regulations allow you to be a part-time homeschool student as long as at least 50% of your subjects are core subjects. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's correct, Representative Guerra.
And then your allotment would be, if you're a half-time student, your allotment would be half?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, I would like to clarify. The part-time student law allows you to attend on a part-time basis, even down to one course. But if you're going to enroll on a part-time basis on a statewide correspondence program, the department's regulations require that first course to be a core subject.
And then do you get the full allotment or you get a partial?
No, you get it, through the chair, Representative Guerra, you would get a quarter allotment for one course. The first course has to be core. Then you could take a second course. That course could be PE or music. But you have to take one core course before you get access to the second piece, basically the electives.
Mr. Chair, could I ask you one question just so I understand this?
Yeah.
So you had mentioned also you homeschool through a statewide program or through a local program?
Statewide.
And I guess, and you had mentioned the sort of value of I forget which non-core subjects you said your children use, but one was equestrian, right? Is that something that they approve now for use of the 15% of the money for the equestrian lessons, or is that something that the state is not approving? Just so I can understand.
If you are in an in-district program, you can do that. If you're not a district, you cannot.
So they're not compensate. They wouldn't compensate you for that.
The wish of this committee. I'd like to take a vote on this bill this time.
You want?
Or this resolution?
You want me to move the bill?
Correct.
Mr. Chairman, I would move a House Concurrent Resolution number 2524-LS1404/G. There's no fiscal note.
Individual.
No, the individual recommendation. I beg your pardon.
Is there any opposed? Okay. This bill passes out of this committee unopposed at this time. That ends this committee meeting. Thank you, folks.